Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Hey guys, Ryan here from Somewhere in the Skies, and today we have a very exciting interview for you guys. You know them being featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the Paranormal Rangers, but if you're not familiar with their work, you're going to learn all about it tonight. We have Jonathan Dover and Stanley Milford on the show. So let's not waste any more time. Let's bring them in. We're going to hear the origin of how the Navajo Paranormal Rangers started, the investigations that they conducted, and where things stand now. So without further ado, we have Jonathan Dover, Stanley Milford. Welcome to Somewhere in the Skies.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Now, like I mentioned, a lot of people probably saw you guys on Unsolved Mysteries. However, a little bit of trivia. My first ever UFO conference I attended was the International UFO Congress, where I was volunteering backstage. You know, I would do whatever they needed me to do, sweep the floors, get coffee, work the soundboard. And I specifically remember I was one of the individuals that put the microphones on you guys for your talk there. And I was blown away. When I had heard that you were basically the real life X-Files, I couldn't get enough. And I've been following your work ever since. Cool. So this is a true honor to have you guys on here today.
It's nice to be here.
It's been a little bit of a travel with COVID and everything, but we came out on the other side okay.
We're all here. Yeah. We're all here, yeah. And we've got a lot of stories to hear from you guys. So I'm excited. Well, before we get to obviously everyone wants to hear about some of the investigations that you guys have been on, but I always like to get the origin story. Of course. So if you guys don't mind, maybe Jonathan, we'll start with you. How you both became Navajo Rangers. How did that opportunity arise before we even get to the special part of those investigations? What made you want to become a Navajo Ranger?
Well, 1980, I actually was looking for a job. And they said at the chapter house, they said, there's an opening for a Navajo Ranger. Had no idea what it was. I ended up applying. They gave me a ride to Window Rock, which is about 130 miles away from where I live. And I walked in and the director there asked me one question. How would you feel if somebody threatened your life? And I told him, I'll cut their ears off at 200 yards of the 300 Savage. And they said, you're hired. Next thing I know, I was in the police academy for 6 months. And so I kind of blundered into it and found out I was pretty good at it. And here I am today, retired.
Wow. That's quite an interview, if you ask me. That's pretty interesting. Stan, how about you? What made you want to become a Navajo Ranger?
I think growing up in a rural setting in Oklahoma, me and a cousin of mine that was a couple of years older than me, at the age of like 10 years old, 9 years old, riding dirt bikes, motocross bikes, and playing cops and robbers, and watching really too much Starsky and Hutch and SWAT. And so I was at the University of Arizona when I was contacted by the director of Parks and Recreation, an individual named Clarence Gorman. And he asked if I would come back and attend the police academy. And that's what I chose to do. So that's I became a Navajo Ranger.
Interesting. Okay. And then, you know, eventually you guys would both meet and start working together. However, I'd love if you could just paint a picture for us. Now, I know the Navajo territory that you covered as Rangers was vast. But what exactly is a Navajo Ranger for those who may not be aware of what the duties actually entail? You know, the areas that you covered, either one of you, if you want to cover that, what exactly is a Navajo Ranger and what areas did you cover?
Okay, so a Navajo Ranger is a very specialized law enforcement officer. What he does is he handles both renewable and non-renewable resource law enforcement. So we were trained and operated in the areas of fish and wildlife, forestry, parks and recreation areas. We would enforce the laws in those areas. Minerals, mines, water resources. We were also tasked with handling search and rescue and technical rescue situations. And then we also did police work on the side when there were no police officers present or able to respond to something, or if there was a life or death emergency.
Interesting. All right, Stan, did you want to add anything to that? I thought that was a pretty good summation.
Well, you know, what we did involving the paranormal was under a section called Special Projects. But within that Special Projects unit, there was a lot of other responsibilities, such as special weapons and tactics call-out, SWAT call-out. So he and I did that. I worked on a drug and gang task force under that section. We did dignitary protection. We took care of some really high-profile and sensitive investigations and assignments and stuff like that. So it wasn't just what people perceive as just a paranormal section. It wasn't. It was kind of a broad spectrum of enforcement. So,
right. I remember hearing you guys elaborate, you know, that the paranormal was maybe 1% of the work that you did out there. Obviously, for audiences like ours, of course, those are the investigations they want to hear about. But let's dive into that, I guess, that 1%. What was it like for both of you personally when you first got assigned to these cases? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, it was just another day at the office when you were told that you were now going to be going out and investigating ghosts, cryptids, UFOs, skinwalkers, things like this. Jonathan, maybe we'll start with you. What was it like that first day when you learned you'd be working on these quote-unquote special investigations?
Well, the director had the chief ranger had a meeting with the entire department. And basically, there had been an investigation. And if you know these guys that went out there, two rookies, they were regular jokers. They would laugh and joke all day long and just have these little private jokes about, you know, around them. And they went up to a lady that lost one of her sheep to a Bigfoot. And of course, they were laughing, joking, you know, horsing around. And she took offense to that and thought they were laughing at her and chewed out our chief ranger. So he called everyone in, basically told us that these cases would be investigated professionally, and there would be reports written. Turn to me and Stan, and I like to tell everybody that we were voluntold. We didn't request it. We didn't raise our hands or anything. Suddenly we were told that we would be getting the major cases involving paranormal stuff. And we just looked at each other and like, you know, wow, we didn't see that coming.
Stan, what was it like for you personally when you learned that you now would be investigating these quote unquote special paranormal cases?
One of the things was, is that up until the point that we were assigned to attend this department-wide meeting, it was just a normal day. It was just an everyday, a regular day. But we did have a department-wide staff meeting. We were called into that meeting. And so heading up that special projects unit, one of the main reasons we were a part of that was that I think the chief ranger at that time, we worked really close with him. We were probably the closest personnel working directly with the chief. And we had developed this relationship where he knew he could give me and John assignments, and regardless of how technical they were or how difficult they might be, that he could rely on me and John to handle it regardless. And that John and I think with him had developed a reputation of dependability and reliability and professionalism. So when we got assigned, it wasn't like John and I were over there raising our hands saying, "Oh, we want to run this," or whatever. That wasn't the case. It was simply that Chief had this assignment, and he looked at us two and said, "You two are the ones that are going to manage these assignments or these cases investigations." So. At first, you know, it was kind of like all of the other assignments we had received. It's yes, sir. And you did what you were told, you know. But I don't think that we, you know, yes, John and I had all our own personal experiences with what would be termed a supernatural or paranormal, even prior to those assignments. And even actually there was cases we did that prior to that would have fallen under what would be termed as paranormal or supernatural. But so I think that kind of, it facilitated us to get right into that and get busy investigating these things and stuff. So,
but, right.
For me, well, it was just one of those another assignment, you know, that we were given. And so we were going to do it regardless of the nature of what it was.
Right. That was actually going to be one of my questions for you guys. Were there ever instances where, you know, you went into a case to investigate and that you then it turned into a paranormal case? Like it wasn't, you weren't sent out to investigate someone who had a Bigfoot sighting, but you know, boom, all of a sudden you're in the middle of, you know, a quote unquote conventional investigation of something else. And I don't know, a UFO zipped by or a, you know, a paranormal event occurred. Did that ever happen to you guys?
Oh, and things like that would happen all the time. There are many, many cases where the paranormal would kind of peek at you and you'd understand that, hey, there's something more going on here. And for the most part, you just kind of ignored it or let it be on the side, did your report, tried to maintain as many factual stuff as you could within the report. And it was just kind of, you know, it was understood, it was there.
Interesting. So I guess let's start from the beginning when these cases were assigned to you guys. Do you remember the very first quote unquote paranormal case that you were assigned to? Any memories of what that was and how it kind of led you down the path?
We got a case initially. What had happened was that this is one of the ones that showed up on the Netflix series. We had at least 30 people have sightings of Bigfoot right around that Bloomfield, between Bloomfield and Shiprock along the San Juan River. And they were frightened. And the community had gone to the local police department and says, hey, you know, we got all these sightings of this Bigfoot. And the lieutenant came out and in front of everybody just laughed at them and went, ha ha ha, I wonder how much these people have had to drink. Mm-hmm. And so they basically turned their backs on the police and said, you know, we want nothing to do with you guys. And they contacted the Rangers. We sent a 6-man crew up there and spent 3 days and 2 nights thoroughly investigating the case, getting statements from people along the river, and collecting hair evidence, foot track evidence, and things like that, and did determine that there was something going on.
Interesting. Stan, do you have anything to add to that first Bigfoot investigation you guys went on? And, you know, what did you, was this something that you were familiar with before getting involved? And, how'd you come out on the other side thinking about Bigfoot after that?
That assignment that you're talking about that he's referring to up along the San Juan River, it really was the first where we're involving a number of Rangers assigned to an actual investigation that was obviously within that realm of paranormal investigation. I don't think I actually witnessed what people refer to as a Bigfoot until later on in some other investigations where I actually witnessed what it is people refer to as a Bigfoot. Twice I've had an experience where I've seen this either entity or this, you know, I don't, whether it's a creature or, but anyway, so prior to that, you know, to that particular assignment, I really didn't have a whole lot of experience in that, but it did involve an entire team, and it involved the planning for that assignment and the equipment that would be needed, and really opened my eyes to how. Really how involved the entire community in that area was actually having witnessed this thing that people referred to as Bigfoot.
So this is primarily a UFO podcast. So I know our listeners are going to want to hear from you guys about that. So John, let's start with you. What is your most memorable, I guess, investigation that involved the mysteries in our skies?
Well, this again would be one of our cases. We refer to it as the old man case. In this incidence, an elderly man was home by himself. This is the short version. There's other versions of it that go into much more detail. But we had this situation where this old man, his wife and daughter had gone to Phoenix. And so he was home by himself. It's midnight or one in the morning, and he sees a light. And it looks like, to him, it looked like a car coming up the road. It turned out that it was this craft that was flying, circled his house, and then landed up on the ridge behind him. He sees something come out of the craft, out of the bottom, and go down to a house maybe a half mile away, go back up to the craft, and then come back toward his house. His dog starts barking. It's a little blue heeler pup. And, you know, it goes running out there barking. And he hears it, you know, yelp. And it comes running back to the house and curls up by the front doorstep and just lays there, doesn't move. So now he's getting nervous and he goes inside. He's looking out the window and sees what could be described as a gray alien, four of them that have these little flashlights in their hands. He calls it flashlight, but it has a collimated beam about an inch in diameter. And different color beams of light, red, blue, yellow, and green. And they're shining it around, looking like they're looking for something. Out around his house, he has all these solar lights, and they seem to be very fascinated by these lights. And as they approach them and gather around the light slowly dims and goes out. They back up, they stand up again and back up, and the light comes back on again. And they would lean in again, and the light would go out. This happened several times. Finally, he decides he's in Navajo. There's no word for alien. So he's saying, what are these little children doing around my house? He says they were wearing these white skin-tight suits, either white or light gray. And so he goes out to confront them. He says they had big heads and they had black eyes. And as he turns the corner around the backside of the house, he tripped on the step and fell, broke his flashlight. And as he looked up, these things were hightailing it away. In later conversations, he describes them as being startled and having their hands up and waving them and then, you know, getting away. So they get back to the ship, they take off, and, he doesn't know what the result of that was. Later on, we found out a couple of weeks later that that little dog had died. We didn't know about it at the time. Otherwise we could have had it necropsied, and we did a full investigation there with a, federal court interpreter doing simultaneous translation for us.
That's a really interesting case, a close encounter of the third kind, I would say, and very dramatic, if you ask me. And what I appreciate is, you know, you guys aren't just out there taking witness testimony. You're actually trying to find evidence, find proof of these things, which was, you know, shown in the Unsolved Mysteries episode. Of testing a car where a UFO hovered above it and things like that. So I found that really interesting. Stan, how about in terms of UFO investigations? Anything really memorable stick out to you about UFO activity over the Navajo territory?
One of the UFO experiences that John and I had, it hadn't started out as an actual paranormal related case. It was a drowning. An individual had drowned somewhere in the San Juan River. And John and I had placed a boat in the water at Lake Powell and began traversing to the east along in the San Juan River. And so we got so far, and it was getting late in the day. We came to a debris field where we couldn't go any further. for fear of damaging the prop on the boat. And so we just pulled off. We decided we would camp for the rest of the day and evening. And so we set up camp, and that night, really clear sky. We were laying on our cots, and I noticed an object that was coming from the west, headed in the east direction. And this particular object was kind of amber in color, and it was a little bit bigger than what you normally see with common satellites. And the really unusual thing about this particular object was that it was making a zigzag pattern as it moved to the east. And so I got John's attention, and we began watching it. As it got almost right directly above us at about the 12 o'clock position, we noticed following in line behind it was two military craft. And it turned out John was able to identify these as F-16. And he advised that they had their afterburners on, which meant that they were pursuing this in an accelerated way. So, but a little bit later, as we were watching this, all of a sudden, this zigzagging object accelerated to the east. And at a blinding speed. I mean, we were able to see the edge of the horizon from where we were at. And this object went almost from the 12 noon position all the way to the horizon. You know, within like a second and a half, it was gone. And we watched it disappear. And it left the two F-16 fighters, you know, side by side, trailing behind this, kind of like a child on a tricycle, because this thing, the capability and technology that would have been involved in this, for this object to accelerate to, we guesstimate somewhere in the name of, in the area of like 10,000 miles an hour. And it was just unbelievable, and it left me and John in awe of watching this thing, what just played out right in front of us. And again, like you had said earlier, you know, we set out on an investigation that ended up being something of a paranormal or UFO nature that, you know, we didn't, there was no expectation for that. It just happened right there in front of us, and we were left in awe. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, preparedness is, you know, a word that I assume comes up a lot before you go into an investigation of any kind. And I'd love to touch on that with you guys before we move to, some listener questions here. How do you mentally, physically, I guess even emotionally prepare to go into an investigation where you have no idea what's going to happen, whether it's paranormal or not? Do you both have any personal routines or practices or anything to prepare you for these types of investigations? John, let's start with you.
Well, for me, you can have preconceived ideas. A great man once said that, can you look at a situation without naming it? Naming it, making it a word, causes fear. So you don't name it. You go in without a preconceived idea of what you're going to see or experience. And you go in with the idea that you're going to do the job. In my work, I was a licensed EMT as a uniformed officer, and I would see horrific injuries and amputations and people dead and actually dying. And I found out that if you stop and let that overtake you, you're no good to anybody. And so you just have to do the job and get to the point where you're going to be their best hope of survival. And in the paranormal cases, you do something similar. You don't show that fear, you know, like you see on TV today, you see these guys, you know, oh my God, oh my God. And they start running around. Mm-hmm. And the panic overtakes them. We never did that. And, you know, we just went into it and said, whatever happens will happen.
I know Stan has had a personal experience with a skinwalker, and I know you've actually been to Skinwalker Ranch. So I'd love to get your opinion on that whole aspect of a lot of this phenomena. Is this something you've pursued in your own investigations? And what do you make of these areas, I guess, these condensed areas of high strangeness, whether it's Skinwalker Ranch or the areas that you and Stan investigated? What do you make of the entire Skinwalker phenomenon?
Well, the Skinwalker phenomenon is basically worldwide. You have incidences of shape changers in Australia and Africa, in Europe and Indonesia, you know, just all over the whole world. Other Indian tribes have similar versions. And interestingly enough, a lot of them, the information is very consistent. You know, telling you that you shouldn't be out in the dark whistling because it attracts these things. They show up as like the Wendigo, the Rake. They can show up as different types of creatures. And but they're all very similar in that a person can shape change. In our discussions of this and talking about it, we've actually had military people show up with clipboards taking notes. And so now we give them a shout out because Indian tribes are not very trusting of the military. But we speculate that the government is interested in this idea because what if you had a soldier who could shape change into an animal and go behind enemy lines and create havoc back there. The one thing that I would caution people about is that in the case of, and I'm only speaking about the Navajo skinwalker, they can actually be dangerous. They're not an avatar. They're not a spirit form of something sent out to do the bidding. They are real people that have, basically learn how to do this. And they can poison you and they can injure you rather severely or make you so sick that you won't be able to function for a year and a half, as in one case that we had. So we caution people and even film crews that come out that if they want to go look for the skinwalkers, we're done. We're going to call it. And because we have seen what they can do, they can be killed also. That's one thing that we did find out over a period of time, and I've known it for a long time, that people have actually shot them, and they, some of them have died. And in fact, in 1977, one was killed in Chin Li, and, you know, somebody knocked on the door. The guy opened it up and got an axe in the head. The FBI arrested two individuals, and they said, well, you know, in trial, they said, if it wasn't us, you know, we were designated by the community to go do this. And, you know, we did our job. If it wasn't us, it would have been somebody else. And they were actually acquitted in federal court of homicide.
Wow. That's crazy. I whoa, that one left me speechless. Wow. Well, I mean, what do you think, John, actually being on Skinwalker Ranch? I mean, you know, a lot of people are very critical of the work being done there. You know, they're being told not to dig and, you know, to not upset the land there to do their scientific investigations and whatnot. Having been there, having sort of been at the center of all of that, what do you make of Skinwalker Ranch? And do you think they should continue to try to investigate there and figure out what's going on? The Somewhere in the Skies podcast is free to listen to every week, but if you would like to help support the show, we have a very active Patreon page where you give what you think the show is worth. In return, you'll get early access to the main show, bonus episodes, and priority to ask our guests your listener questions. Your support truly makes the show continue and grow. So, to learn more and to join, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, there's definitely something going on there. There is high strangeness. There is an energy source that's showed itself. There's a frequency showing 1.6 gigahertz. And it's my understanding that this frequency is only used by NASA for communication with spacecraft that we launch. So there's a lot going on. UFOs show up over there. Cryptids show up, Bigfoot shows up, you know, and we have areas on our reservation here that are very, very similar that people avoid and, you know, stay away from. There's areas down in Sedona that they call them vortexes, but they're very similar in energy profiles. And so we've seen a lot of the same things up here. We just don't advertise it or talk about it. But there are a lot of them. Dulce is another one on the Jicarilla Reservation that has a lot of strangeness. So we think that there's these nodules, so to speak, all around the United States of places that are probably either inaccessible or avoided by a lot of people because of these strange things that go on. Skinwalker Ranch, the NIDS team that was there prior under Bob Bigelow, the information that they gathered is still considered classified even today. And so the team that's up there now had to start, you know, all over from the ground up. And they were told by when the ranch was sold to them not to dig because they found out that if you started digging, things would happen. It would provoke a response. And they've seen that up at Skinwalker Ranch with Thomas being injured and having to go to the hospital. We saw Travis Taylor get injured when he stuck his head over a hole and got his face irradiated with radiation. So there's lots of danger there. For me, doesn't really bother me. I go through my protection regimen before going there, and you know, every day afterwards, just to keep myself protected. And I've been on the ranch, but I haven't been injured, and you know, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, fingers crossed it stays that way. Well, in terms of all of the cases, John, you've looked at throughout the years in relation to the paranormal, supernatural, ufological, even, do you have a favorite case or one that you continue to chase until today, or most memorable, all wrapped into one? Is there any case that truly personifies that for you?
Well, there is a case, and it's a little bit out of the way, but I'll go ahead and tell it because there's a point to it.
Okay.
There was a lady that contacted our department, and she said that, well, she's what we classify in law enforcement as EDP, which is an emotionally disturbed person. So they're having some issues mentally. And she had contacted the city police, the state police, the county, the Navajo police. Everybody told her that, you know, we don't handle that, or, you know. And what she was saying was that skinwalkers were coming around her house and trying to drive her off her land. So she contacted our department, and me and Stan says, okay, we'll go out there and meet with her. She had inherited this land from her mother, who had passed away and had spent all her life in different states. She was taking a whole regimen of drugs. And so we started looking at this. And she showed us some little tiny bundles of feathers and leather that had been left out, you know, near her house, and said that things were coming around, scratching at the, you know, at the side of the house and things like that. We found tracks, and we started to track it. In tracking these tracks, and both me and Stan are very good trackers, we found at least six individuals that had come up from a trail behind her house. And they had, they you could see where they stood around in a little circle and talked with each other. What we determined was that these were local town drunks that had, she had a little hogan that had no windows and no door. And they were using this as a crash pad for themselves. And when she came to take over the property again and started living there, they tried to drive her out by imitating skinwalker activity. And she was genuinely frightened. So as a result of that, we told her, these are not skinwalkers. These are local drunks. They're trying to chase you away from your land. And, you know, so it's not, definitely not skinwalker activity, although they tried to make it look like it. We didn't hear anything more. She was very thankful. A month later, our dispatcher got a call, and this lady is on the line again. She is crying on the phone, and she said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've gotten my house fixed up, and I'm living there, and I have no more issues going on. And I just wanted to call you and thank you for, you know, for listening to me. And what me and Stan have found out is that it's about helping people, that maybe nobody else wants to take a look at this issue. We had an old grandma up in Dulce when we spoke up there come up to us, and she had tears, you know, in her eyes, and she was explaining that as a little girl, she had orbs and UFOs come around her, and she had never told anybody in the family. The kids, the grandkids, the great-grandkids all had their jaws down on the floor, because nobody had ever heard her talk about this. And she thanked us for talking about these subjects and bringing it out, because it actually helped her tell her story to her family. So it's really all about, if we can, to try to help people.
Let's wrap up. Actually, I've got, two listener questions for you. If you don't mind. We have our first one here from Metal Matt. He's one of our Patreon subscribers, and he wants to know, do you and Stan have any plans of writing a book about your experiences?
Yeah, quick answer. Stan is currently working on his book and has a publisher and an agent and everything else. My book is about one third away through, but it's 47 chapters. So there's a lot to write, and it's an uphill thing.
I know the vice president of HarperCollins Publishing had contacted John, and he showed that he was excited and very interested in publishing both John and my books. And so when John let me know that, I did jump on that. John and I had already been writing to put together individual books going way back to when we were working as Rangers. I think once we had really got into doing these kind of investigations, that it was interesting to us. I mean, and it still is today. A big part of what we do in the investigation is the fact that we're curious. There's a curiosity and wanting to learn more about the unknown. And so when that opportunity presented itself, for me, you know, after John let me know on it, I jumped right on it. And things did seem to roll really quickly with it. And so, yeah, we both will be working to get our books out.
Awesome. Oh, I'm looking forward to that for sure. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, kind of playing off of that, Lisette over on YouTube wants to know, were there any cases that you guys covered on Unsolved Mysteries that didn't actually make it onto the show that you wish had, or any cases that you wish they had actually covered? You know, I mean, what we got on the show was incredible, but any cases you really wish they had gone after or possibly got left on the editing floor, as they call it?
I don't think in what we filmed there was anything that was left on the cutting room floor. I think everything that we set out and we actually filmed was included. The challenge is that, for a given episode, there's only so much room to be able to fit things in. But me and John, you know, we've discussed this among ourselves in length. There's so many cases and events and incidents that we've never even shared with the public. To date, I mean, I have incidents that involving a doppelganger, an incident where mass livestock were killed in an unusual manner, and you know, so many different things. And I know John has the same. And so there's still so much more, and even personal experiences with the paranormal that's still going on to this very day. So there's so much more that we have to be able to bring to the surface and bring to the public. So, yeah.
Interesting. John, did you want to add anything to that?
Oh, boy. They said that when we finished filming that they had enough actually for two episodes, but they could only put one episode down. One of the things that we're very adamant about, because we had done shows with other production companies and they says, oh, you know, we want to tell your story. And what happens is they kind of made it a mishmash of different stories all put together to make it sound more interesting. And we told this company that we weren't going to do that. If they would tell our story correctly, that we would work with them. And, you know, they did. I've got to hand it to them. They came out, you know, it was great. They actually were very careful about making sure that every little detail was correct. And we were happy with the result that we saw.
I think one of the things that we've made clear up front is that we're not going to fabricate things, you know, that didn't happen. We're not going to exaggerate or, you know, sensationalize these cases that we were involved in. I mean, him and I were not against creating a work of fiction that would be based on some of these experiences. I think there's room for that in a motion picture or whatever. But in what we're sharing, either with our presentations or something like Unsolved Mysteries, you know, we're going to stick to what happened. And we've been very adamant about that. John and I aren't these people that go in these investigations that are jumping and running. Oh my God. And we don't do that. We don't do that and never have done that. And, we've stuck to the fact that we are investigators. We were sworn at the time, you know, and we're not going to fabricate and make up things and lie about things, you know. And I think that's probably one of the things that maybe sets us apart with some things that you see out there is that we were sworn officers and this was our assignment. And, we had a duty to help people and we still carry that part of it as far as, you know, in the investigations we still do to this day, not as law enforcement, but we're trying to help people, bottom line, people that want help and that there's nobody there to help them. So, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, that was kind of going to be my last question. You know, I know you're both retired now from the Rangers. However, you know, you've made, I would imagine, very strong bonds with these people who've had highly anomalous experiences that you would go on to, you know, become a part of and investigate and find some closure for these people. So that was going to be kind of my last question. Do the investigations continue? And, you know, what is that like, you know, coming out on the other side, not having to speak for the Rangers any longer, but speaking for yourselves on a lot of this stuff? Yeah, that's my long-winded way of asking, do the investigations continue? John, let's start with you.
Well, the investigations have on a case-by-case basis continued. We do get requests, and unfortunately, we don't get paid for any of these. We're doing it on our own time, so to speak, and it can run into quite a bit of money, as you know, just gassing up your truck, you know, to get somewhere can cost a lot now. So it's not that we don't want to do some of these things. It's that in some cases we just can't go and do them. People also ask us, and I need to put this in here. They ask us, how can I protect myself? And in AlienCon, I had a person ask me, you know, should I start smudging? Should I start using sage? And this was a non-Indian that was asking this from the audience. And my answer to them was that go back into the history of your culture and find out what they did to ward off evil. And then use those things with intent, the intent of your mind that this is going to protect you, and make it your own. Don't just copy Native Americans as to what they do. And I had a lot of Native Americans afterwards come up to me and thank me for making that statement, because a lot of people are just adopting or
assimilating. You
know, assimilating what natives do. Right. And, you know, that it really, if you just go through the motions, it doesn't have anything to it. It relies on the intent of the person.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Stan, do you have anything to add to that in terms of the continued investigations and kind of trying to continue to help these people after, you know, the initial events happened?
I think one of the things is that's a part of John's personality and my personality, to help when people are in need, people are around us are in need. And so when it comes to the paranormal or supernatural, you for the most part, you can't run to the local police department because you're going to end up getting turned away, just as what John conveyed with some of the previous cases that happened on the Navajo Reservation. And the unique thing with that is our chief at the time was very adamant that you took an oath, and you may not understand these cases. You may not believe in whatever it is that's being presented, but you're going to be there to help people. That's what you signed on to do, to help people and protect people. And we did that. But that's also a part of John's personality and my personality. You know, for the most part, when people are experiencing, whether it's a Bigfoot case or a haunting case, or, you know, they're reaching out for help. And in our experience, most of those individuals, they're traumatized. They're going through some type of trauma, whether it's a 10-year-old girl being chased by a Bigfoot, you know, after she's dropped off, you know, at the school bus stop, or, you know, things like that. These individuals are traumatized. And, you know, whether it's an elderly woman that's, you know, being victimized and her property being taken by an entity or whatever, these people are needing help. But they're in reality, there is no paranormal police out there to try to come to the rescue. And I guess that's, in a sense, that's what John and I have tried to fulfill, is to be there for the people that need help. Anyway.
I love that. Yeah. Well, they were damn lucky to have you guys. I'll kind of leave it at that, to have such empathetic individuals willing to work with experiencers, you know, because like you said, it's very hard. And people struggle with these things, no matter what they are, aliens, ghosts, cryptids, you know, it's not easy. It's becoming a little easier, I think, for people who've seen UFOs. I mean, UFOs seem to be in the mainstream now more than ever and widely accepted in some ways. But for the other stuff, I can imagine it's still very isolating and alienating to to talk about these things. So, I've seen a UFO, so I guess I'm kind of an experiencer. So I have to thank you guys for, being open and willing to do stuff like that. But, to kind of close things out here, in terms of continuing, Contact in the Desert, June 2nd through the 4th is going to be taking place, and you guys are going to be speaking at that. So, would you mind giving us a little tease of maybe what you'll be talking about? If you know yet when you'll be presenting, anything like that, whichever one of you would like to take that.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. I'm looking at my brains here. on my phone, I have the, we're going to be presenting a workshop first, and this will be on June 2nd on Friday, 7:30 to 9:15 p.m. At the resort there. The workshop is going to be called The Paranormal Rangers, the Native American Approach, and with a question and answer. And this is going to be a much more intimate conversation as to some of the cultural aspects behind what we do. And then we're going to sit down with the audience and be able to take questions and answers. The other one is going to be on Sunday, June 4th at 10:35 to 12:20. And this will be in the main auditorium. And it says the title is Mysterious Discoveries of the Paranormal Navajo Rangers. So this one will be our standard presentation with lots and lots of pictures to put up on the screen.
Oh, cool. I'm definitely jealous. I won't be able to make that, but I've seen you guys present before. It's quite a sight to behold, and seeing the images from these investigations, I think just lends so much credence to them as well. So, guys, definitely
go there
and make it to Contact in the Desert. Yes, please, Stan.
There are a number of other events that both John and I are participating in this year. Would you mind if he elaborates on some of those?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Please.
Okay, back to my brain. I'm at the point now where I have to write everything down, otherwise I just forget it.
I'm the same way.
Okay, so after Contact in the Desert on June 10th through the 11th, I'll be at the Bigfoot Expo in Fairbanks, Alaska. That'll just be me. And after that, we'll both be at, on June 30th, we'll both be at the Roswell Incident speaking. And we have some stuff coming up in September in Colorado, around the middle of September, where we'll be speaking at the Bigfoot Outpost and for Denver MUFON. So there's a lot of things that are still going on. And I would like to say at this point that one of the reasons Stan hasn't been with me on a lot of these talks is that he just retired a week ago.
And
he was still working at the time. So he did 30 years in law enforcement and finally, you know, survived it and got out. But in the time he was there, it was kind of an unspoken thing. We don't want you to go out and do all these UFO cryptid paranormal stuff, because he was doing investigations. So, you know, he's the dogs have been released now. So he's available.
And congratulations.
We're gonna put him to work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's exciting. I know. Just when you thought you were ready to rest, Stan, you're going to be traveling the world speaking about this stuff for the foreseeable future.
That's fine.
That's amazing. Well, I have to thank you guys for giving me your time tonight, sharing those stories with us. But I do kind of want to just give these last moments to both of you. Any last words you want to give to our audience here, just about, you know, this weird world we live in, where it's heading and how all of this paranormal stuff plays into it. Yeah. Any last words you want to leave our viewers and listeners with? Stan, let's start with you.
One of the things really that I want to try to get across and convey is that if you've had these kind of experiences, if your family member, if a family member has an experience, whether it's Bigfoot or UFOs or haunting related activity, you know, really, you're not crazy. You'd be hard pressed to probably try to reach out and find an individual family that has not had a family member that has some type of paranormal experience, whether it's UFOs, Bigfoot, or, you know, things involving witchcraft. So globally, if you look, you'd be hard pressed to try to find any family that hasn't had some type of experience, however small or however, you know, really large or overpressing. So you're not crazy. People have these experiences, and yeah, you're not alone. So I'll let John.
Thank you.
Okay. For me, one of the things as a criminal investigator is that we're constantly looking for answers. We're not satisfied with just, you know, oh, the case is done. Okay. Throw it in the back of the file cabinet and forget about it. We're looking for answers. We want to know. We found out as far back as 2009, we started coming up with a theory that all of these things, UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, even skinwalkers, were all related somehow, that there had to be something common linking them all together. And what we found out was this idea of string theory and parallel dimensions had a lot to do with it. We've got UFOs popping into existence with a definite pop that, you know, the sound goes right through your body, and then they fade out. We've had Bigfoot appear, and when he's appeared and we got more cases involving Bigfoot cases, we saw a corresponding increase in UFO traffic. And we've seen them linked together numerous times that they were seen in the presence of UFOs. And we've tracked Bigfoot, and he's disappeared. If he had taken another step, he would have left a track and backtracked him to the point where his footprints appear. So we think that they're coming in from a parallel dimension through a dimensional gate somehow, and they might be able to manipulate these things. Whether accidental or on purpose, there's definitely something here that they're interested in. Same with hauntings. So, you know, we started talking about this in 2011 in presenting. And since then, the industry, the TV industry, now you tune in and you hear a lot about parallel dimensions, and the government's even trying to figure out how to access and use dimensional gates and faster than light travel. So, yeah, I think we're ahead of the curve now.
Yeah. Well, let's add psychic abilities too, because that was actually a question I forgot to ask you guys. Is this all somehow connected? So thanks, John. You precognitively answered that for me. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, we knew you were going to ask that.
Exactly. It's got to come up at some point in these conversations. But no, I've kept you gentlemen longer than I told you. So we're going to say good night for tonight. But once again, guys, please go, if you can, to Contact in the Desert. That is June 2nd through the 4th. And also check out the other events that John and eventually Stan will be speaking at as well. Yes. Again, I briefly met you guys almost a decade ago at this point. And it was an honor and pleasure to see you speak then. And it was an honor and pleasure to have you on Somewhere in the Skies tonight as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you to your audience.
Yeah. And thank you guys for having us.
We hope to see you out there somewhere.
Somewhere in the skies.
There you go. Exactly.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.